Hey, I'm Eric Rokeach with FitnessBusinessInterviews.com, and today I have the man himself here with me. I have Dr. John Spencer Ellis, and I am so honored and happy to have him here. And what I'm going to do instead of a huge intro, I'm going to kind of just list a couple of things that Dr. Ellis has accomplished so far. So basically, he's done everything and more. He's the founder of NESTA, which is the National Exercise and Sports Training Association. He's also founder of Spencer Institute of Life Coaching, the International Triathlon Coaching Association, MMA Conditioning Association. He's created and executive produced a movie called The Compass, which was great, by the way. He's created adventure boot camps. He has his own series of outdoor exercise equipment. He holds multiple bachelor's degrees, one in business, one in health science. He's got an MBA and a doctorate in education. And he's a philanthropist and founder of Get America Fit Foundation. And that's just a few of the things. I haven't even scratched the surface with everything he's done. So, John, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate everything you're doing for the industry.
Well, thanks. This is going to be cool. And I love this Skype thing. This is awesome. So you shared some new technology with me as well, so I appreciate that. And this just creates even more opportunity for we creative folk in the fitness industry.
Absolutely. All right. So I want to start off the first question. I literally could spend a week with you going over, probably 2 weeks, going over everything that you've done and accomplished so far. But the first thing I want to ask is I kind of want to know what makes you different from the average person who is just kind of comfortable with their life or a person that's just looking to get by.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, we're all unique. That's what makes us humans. Why I've done a lot of stuff, to be less technical, I'm a little obsessive, self-admitted. For me, this is actually not just me. I actually think it's a lot of people who have had a given level of success, is that we tend to be fairly impatient. We get bored fairly quickly. And we tend to have what, you know, some groups in the psychology industry would term ADD. I'm not sure if I necessarily subscribe to that, but it seems to be people who have attained or aspire to have given levels of success have those traits. And so if someone says, oh, you don't have a good attention span, or why do you get bored so easy, or, you know, this and that, I actually think that's okay. And, you know, and I also recommend that parents don't stifle their kids when they're daydreaming, because that's what leads to their future. They're creating their future. They're creating their reality. And if you stifle that, you're in trouble. And the kid won't develop as much as they possibly otherwise could. So I don't know if it's necessarily me. I just think that, you know, people who aspire to more and attain more in life have those traits. And I'm generalizing, but that seems to be the case.
Okay. That may be the case, but you take it to a whole other level. You know, people, it's a huge thing for some people to step outside their comfort zone and start their own business. I mean, obviously you started there too, but you seem to just take it one more level. Do you think there's something that's different or a drive that you have that maybe somebody else doesn't?
if I figure it out, I got to let my mom know, because she's always wondering what the heck I'm doing. You know, okay. Seriously, 42 now, she's still wondering what the heck I do for a living. I'm obsessed, but in a good way, a healthy way, with the creation process. I love to create. I love to learn. I love to communicate with people who are much smarter than me. It, like, whatever I want to do, I want to find out who is a total rock star at that. Mm-hmm. And I want to learn from them. And I probably ask too many questions at times, but I really am interested, and I really admire smart, talented people. To me, someone who's very talented, whether it's something that is innate to them or something they've developed over time or some combination, or they're really creative or artisans, or, you know, like, I just really, really admire that so much. And I just think these kind of people are cool and fun to hang out with. And I want to kind of appropriately probe their brain, mm-hmm. respectfully, and not just learn maybe how they did something, but how did they come to the conclusions they did? What was the process? And what did they learn along the way? You know, and also what mistakes did they make? You know, a lot of people always want to talk about, you know, all the successes and things like that. But if you don't acknowledge your crap too, you're in serious trouble. And, you know, actually what's funny is, I was aware of this, but when we were filming The Compass, you know, a couple of years ago, I was in a, we were filming with Dr. John DeMartini. And when the camera stopped rolling, we had this great conversation. And he basically was saying that, you know, you have to have the contrast in order to appreciate the good parts too. Because, you know, sometimes people walk around in la-la land and they say, everything's just great. Gosh, I'm just happy all the time. I'm just cheery. And I'm thinking, you are such, well, a BSer, right?
Yeah.
It's not true. And if you do float around in that fantasy land, you're not being honest with yourself and you have no perspective. You know, people say, just focus on what you want. Focus on what you want. That is true. You need to do that most of the time. But if you also don't have awareness of what you don't want, you don't know. You have no contrast to motivate you in every possible way. So, yes, you need to identify a problem or something that you don't like, but then you focus on what you do want. But you have to be able to take the good and the bad. It's like, you know, before we started this interview, I opened up the windows to get more light in here. I said, oh, my gosh, today's a beautiful day. It's so sunny and it's awesome outside. It's very green because we just had some rain. But if it had always been like this, I wouldn't appreciate it,
yeah.
Or maybe not as much. So we need that contrast in everything in life. And I think you have it. And so going, I got a little off tangent, but the point is that I think you have to acknowledge mistakes in others, especially in yourself, and be able to learn from that and not get too down on yourself. And sometimes I do, and I know other people do as well. You know, if you make mistakes, you have to own it. You have to own your stuff, you know, and then move on and you know, hopefully become a better person because of what you learned and then help other people as well.
You talked about you were real interested in finding people who were better than you at doing things. You wanted to know everything about it, kind of model them.
Yeah.
Is it something that you have always been interested in, that you always were like that, or was there a defining moment where you're like, you know, I need to start following this guy. He's doing something really cool, and I want to do that too.
You know, I've told this story before, but I'll give you the Reader's Digest version.
Sure.
My quest in, you know, wanting to get better at sports or fitness or personal development, it started when I used to watch the Olympics with my father, and he was a bodybuilder, and we used to watch the Olympic powerlifters. You know, and they do the clean and jerk and the snatch. And these guys were just huge, and they'd pack on the weight, and then they'd do 10 pounds more, and then 10 pounds more, and then 5. But it kept going. I'm thinking, these guys are all studs. They're all just crazy good, but how do they keep getting better? And so that made me interested in human achievement, but also the psychology aspect of it, because they're all good. They're all talented. But what is separating them when they're just like these mammoth studs, and one guy can do 5 pounds more than the next?
Mm-hmm.
Why did he do that? How did he do that? So that got me interested in the sports psychology part and then the fitness and, you know, all that. And then I saw a Tony Robbins infomercial, like most other people, the late night guy on TV with the big head, the big teeth. And I thought, although this looks a little odd, I think he's onto something here. And so, you know, I don't subscribe to everything that Tony does. And he's certainly not, you know, my, you know, main coach, although he's certainly given me some good direction. I'm grateful for that. But that's just kind of the early stages of the evolution of what got me interested in those two main things. And then Greg LeMond in the Tour de France, because I used to race bicycles. So that got me interested. And then kind of those three figureheads, I just thought, wow, this is crazy stuff. And I gotta get better. I gotta know more. And also Bruce Lee. I can't leave out Bruce Lee.
Right. Okay.
But I mean, the thing is, I would like to say that there was a female that influenced me as well. But at that time, you know, this is 20 something years ago, there weren't as many influential, prominent women in athletics and in that field. So I don't mean to leave them out. It's just that a lot has changed and now they have a great voice. But back then they didn't quite as much.
Right. So you've learned from them, model. Then I know you're big, obviously, in personal development and growth along with everything else. What would you say is like one of the biggest things a person could do to grow for themselves? Now, maybe each individual, but is there anything in your case that was like one of the biggest growth experiences and learning experiences for you?
Making some personal mistakes that hurt, and just doing a couple dumb things that I thought, gosh, I don't ever want to do that again. You know? And I thought I from this point forward, I'm going to be a better person. So that,
okay.
And then really making the movie The Compass was a real turning point for me. You know, in short, actually T. Harv Eker and I sat in a hotel room and came up with the definition of The Compass before we shot his stuff. And we were in San Diego, and because he goes, well, if you're on Oprah, what are you going to tell her The Compass is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to explain that, and said, it's kind of all these different things that make you who you are. And he goes, what are you going to tell Oprah? What is The Compass? Well, it's everything. Well, that's not going to work. So, what we came up with is, it's your inner guidance system that gives you direction. And, you know, it's an accumulation of your experiences, your mentors, your beliefs and your values that shape you and give you direction in life wherever you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your compass. So, and we talk about a compass shift, like a moment in time. Oprah calls it her aha moment. You know, with like, you were one way before, and immediately after this thing happens, you're a completely different person. It changes you.
Yep.
And so making the movie, which actually took 9 months, that was my major shift. You know, I learned a ton from really cool, great, smart people. I made a lot of new friends. It completely changed my life. I learned a lot of new things. I learned I didn't know a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that was probably my real defining moment. And an interesting thing, this is just a quick side note, but one of the neatest things that come out of The Compass, you know, it's been translated into like 9 languages. The book has as well. It's been seen all over the world. And it's been a success, and I'm totally grateful for that. And yet one story stands out to me, and it was the night of the world premiere. And there was a lady actually who I went to high school with. She came to the world premiere, and she got a VIP bag. So she got the Compass DVD to take home with her. She found out that one of her friends in a group that she belonged to on Facebook was contemplating suicide. And she says, you know, hang in there. She's trying to give her words of wisdom and motivation over Facebook and email. And, you know, she's at a distance. She got the Compass movie. She overnighted, FedExed it to her friend. She says, don't do anything. Just watch this.
Wow.
And her friend changed her mind, decided not to commit suicide, thank God. And she instead wrote out a plan to change her path, and she wrote out a plan for the next year of her life.
That's awesome.
How cool is that?
That's cool.
That's one thing that really stood out to me. I thought, wow, that all was worth that one thing.
Yeah, definitely. Very, you can definitely, you know, have – something to measure that you could say that it was a literally life-changing thing for
totally.
Somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Well, while we're on The Compass, because I did have a couple questions about that.
Sure.
You said, you know, you were sitting down with T. Harv Eker. Where was the idea for it? Like, why did you decide to do it and, you know, like, just get it out there and do it as a movie?
Okay. As with most crazy things that I come up with, I just dream about it, and I wake up and I decide I'm going to do it. It's that simple.
Oh, okay.
I woke up, next to my wife, and I said, I had a dream. I'm going to make a movie. I'm going to call Josh and Marlo. Those are the people that produce for us. And I said, and I called Marlo the next day. I said, what are you doing for the next 9 months? She goes, I'm free. She's all right. I said, we're going to make a movie. And so the book actually came about after the movie was, in production, and generally it's done the other way around. But that's what happened. And, mm-hmm. so I had a dream, decided to do it. I feel that when it comes to personal development, oftentimes people get pumped full of sunshine and they get really inspired and motivated, and they think they're just going to manifest and dream. And although visualization is incredibly important, probably the most, well, actually, I say equally important to action. People say, I want to attract, well, you have to act. You know, if you can sit and meditate and, or pray about it and do all that, that's good. It's part of the process. It's not enough. You have to get off your butt and move and take action. And it's the diligence in your approach, and it is the consistency in the approach, and it is the commitment to the process and being willing to modify your approach as you go along as well. And so I think too many aspects of personal development become too spiritual or too woo-woo, as I call it. And that doesn't give you structure, foundation, plan, strategies, tactics, or a definitive path. It gives you hope, and that's not enough.
Okay.
So I wanted to have a message of, and when you see the compass, you'll see that, you know, it's broken up into very specific chronological chapters that give you all the steps that are necessary, rather than just saying, you know, manifest it, believe it, dream it, you know, put it on a board. You know, I think all that's great, and it all that helps. It absolutely does, and it's not enough.
Right. It's the secret of the secret.
Well, it's the missing part for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and because I'm kind of a media guy and a big background in it, you know, I have a couple questions that I'm curious about it. So you came up with the idea for the movie. You were the executive producer, I believe. Is that right?
I created it and executive produced it and co-authored the novel.
Okay. So what exactly was the process and the steps for you? You came up with the idea, like what was the next thing you did and how did you get rolling and kind of just find everybody for it?
I'm trying to think of, I'll recollect it to the best of my ability.
Sure.
It happened very quickly. And here, I'll tell you this too. If someone had told me what we are going to do is impossible, I don't always believe when people say that, but I would think, well, maybe we need to rethink it a little bit. But what we had done in 9 months, people said it was supposed to take 2 years because within the span of 9 months, we developed the concept, wrote the outline, funded it, did pre-production, production, post-production, you know, all the sound and Foley and all the different stuff that goes into it. But if people aren't into it, that's the sound effects and like the wind and the birds and stuff like that you hear in it. And we wrote the novel, we sold the, in one day I went to New York City and we sold the book to 5 countries in 1 hour. That was the weirdest day of my life. And then over time, the movie got translated or subtitled, depending on which country it is. That's an interesting process and decision as well. I forget how many countries for the book and the novel exactly, but you know, it's roughly 7 to 9, either one. I just don't remember which one's which. But, as far as rounding up the talent, I have to say to this day, I'm astonished that I got the people I got in the movie.
Well, because some people haven't seen it, so can you mention who was in the movie?
Well, I mean, if people saw The Secret, they remember Marie Diamond. She's the feng shui lady. She's in it. John DeMartini, John Assaroff, Joe Vitale, they're all in it. And T. Harv Eker, who is the number one New York Times bestselling author of Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, which is a book I highly recommend. Harv is a brilliant guy, very cool. He was fun to work with. Brian Tracy, the godfather of personal development with Tony Robbins. He's in it. Les Brown, one of the best speakers ever in the world. When he speaks to you, man, you just shut up and sit down and listen. Like he commands your authority. And his awesome daughter, Ona, is in it as well. Dr. Robbie Ludwig, who has had shows on VH1. She's guest hosted for Larry King, and she's the psychoanalyst, psychologist that's often on the Today Show.
Okay.
And so she's in there as well. My wife, Kelly Ellis, is in it as well. She's a design psychology expert about how your environment changes your success. And it's not the feng shui. It's not the woo-woo stuff. It's the science.
Right.
Color, functionality, texture, light, how that makes you improve mood, like I said, functionality, efficiency, creativity. And it's all scientifically based stuff because everything matters. That's the point of the compass, and then the spinoff from that, the matrix mind. All everything matters. Not one system is best. And sometimes people get that's the thing too, that people get too weird sometimes about personal development, like if they're into NLP. Like NLP is it, or they like hypnosis or whatever, and they get too weird, almost like a religion about it. And it's like it's just a tool. It's a strategy. It may work for some people, it may not work for everybody, and it may only work in certain ways for certain people or better applications. So that's why, you know, for these different things I do, like the compass, I wanted a full range of people. Like, and so going back to the cast, we have a huge range of people in age, ethnicities, both genders, different educational levels, background. Some are more spiritual, some are more clinical. Also, Dr. Bruce Lipton.
Yeah.
I got to recommend his book, The Biology of Belief. He's a cell biologist, and he was one of the people in the Human Genome Project decoding our DNA. And his work is about how our beliefs and our interpretation of our environment, not just the environment itself, but our interpretation of our environment actually changes who we are as a person from a biological cellular level. It's phenomenal stuff. It's not woo-woo pseudoscience. It's called, the science is called epigenetics. Epigenetics. Highly recommend his stuff. He's so smart, it just freaks me out.
All right, so you've got a...
The characters. And then there's a parable story of the traveler going through his travels in life. And then the book parallels the story but gives more in-depth into the what the voiceover in the movie replaced.
You've got, you know, those are some big dogs, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it myself.
How did you get them, you know, to work with you on this?
Well, I tell you what, this is a good lesson. I didn't know how we were going to do it. I didn't know how it was all going to work. Actually, Joe Vitale asked me if he could be in my movie. Surprised me.
Very cool.
John Astaroff and I had mutual friends, and then Harv and I had a lot of mutual friends. Also, another person in the movie is my good friend Topher Morrison. I can't leave out Topher. He's one of the best speakers and speaker coaches and trainers in the world. Basically, the reason this works, and this is a great lesson for everyone watching this, is the people that do a lot of my videos, you see all my stuff, is Josh Stone and Marlo Greenlee, 336 Productions. I got to give them a plug because they're just awesome and they're such cool people. 336productions.com. That was the media class they met at in Long Beach State. Now they're married. 336 Productions. That's what they named their company. So they had a template from film school, which is basically putting together a project to present to people, whether it's for funding or to secure a cast or for whatever. But my understanding from all these people who have been in a lot of movies all over the world, that we are the only company that ever did that. And so they realized we were legit. They didn't think that, you know, who's this guy that's coming from the fitness industry that's doing personal development stuff and is this thing actually going to fly? So we actually said, these are the cameras that we have. This is a non-union job. Here are the legal forms. This is the timeline. This is the distribution methodology.
Wow.
Here's how we're going to promote it. This is the web domain. We're having an affiliate program. Here's how it's all laid out. Here are the secured cast members. Here are the cast members that are pending. And we gave it to them in a beautiful presentation in a PDF document and sent it to all the people. So they could see that we're legit, not a bunch of knuckleheads. And that is actually what sold a lot of people because they knew we were for real.
Wow. And then once you had one, you know, one name on board, then it was probably easier to bring in a couple of others.
Had a cascading effect.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to be left out. No one wants to be left out of something that's going to be really cool. And the feedback's been great. It's been awesome.
I'll tell you with the one thing that stood out, there's a bunch of things with the movie, but one thing that really stood out was I first met you in Ryan Lee's First Continuity Summit, and you were there, and I think it wasn't officially released yet, but you know, maybe you were selling the DVD online or something, and I just remember, and I remember getting the bag, and you got up on stage and just saying something real quick, and you gave it out, just, this is going to be life-changing, and you just gave it to people, and I never forget that, and I kind of want to know why you just gave it out. I mean, obviously, you know, it cost a ton of money to do, but what was the reason for just, hey, have it, this is going to help you?
Two reasons, and it's 50-50. I wanted to help people and I wanted to promote the movie. It's 50-50. And if someone says, oh, there's no promotional benefit, or I just didn't do it for the reason, they're not being truthful. Mm-hmm. I did it because I wanted to promote it, and I did it because I wanted to help people. Half and half. The reason that I thought it'd be so advantageous there is because the people who are there at Ryan's event, which I'm speaking at this year, by the way, I'm going to be a speaker. I'll have more information on that soon. Mm-hmm. These people are some of the most influential people in the fitness coaching, personal development, and marketing world. And so, you know, they can share it with a lot of other influential people. And there are also people who can share the message of the compass with the masses as well, so more people can benefit, like the lady who decided to go on with their life, you know, because they will be able to interpret it at a pretty deep level because they're pretty forward-thinking, advanced, open-minded people. Mm-hmm. So it was a very receptive, good audience for that.
Yeah, very cool. And I just remember that, and that stood out to me, and I remember watching it and actually sat down with a bunch of other people when we watched it. And so I was like, he gave this away for free. I was like, you know, he put a ton of money and time into this, and I just thought that was pretty cool. So,
well, thank you. Thanks.
Yeah. And all right, so kind of want to shift gears a little bit. I'm sure you get this all the time, and I'm not going to ask you to answer this question. I know you're busy. How do you manage all your time? I know you probably manage your time because you have an incredible team in place. I want to know more about your team. I want to know how they help you and how they help you and your businesses.
Well, yeah, a lot of people are under the illusion, it's definitely an illusion, that I do all this myself, or a lot of it, which is not true at all. I definitely spearhead it. Mm-hmm. I'm the leader of the team. I'm the visionary. However, there is no possible way I could do the things I do without a group of very, very talented people. I have a COO who manages the company operations, and she's also CTO. She comes from an IT background, and ironically, when I met her, she was actually doing online education for a technology company. So it worked out perfect. And then she and I became friends and said, you got to work with me. And this is years and years and years ago. Like web 0.001, I mean, a long time ago. And then I have a VP of Nesta and all of our associations, Scott Gaines, and he's a super smart guy. He's a biomechanist, professor at two universities as well, and third degree black belt martial artist. I mean, the guy's he's a smart dude, very accomplished, and he helps with all the educational programs and some of the technology stuff as well. He's definitely our in-house propeller head, mm-hmm. and he likes that as well. And I have, you know, I have reception, customer service, order fulfillment. And then personally for me, I have an accountant, a financial planner, and an attorney that manage all my stuff. And I have someone who I have a bookkeeper also that works with the accountant and the financial planner and the attorney.
Right. So it's not a huge, large team. I mean, you have your own personal guys, too, to help you. But for the business, there's not, you know, you don't have dozens or hundreds of employees.
No, not even close. Yeah. And that's an important lesson, too. You know, what we've said is like, you know, we're not ACE or we're not NASM. We're competitors because all three of us have the NCCA accreditation for our personal trainer program. Mm-hmm. We all try to get each other's business. And if anyone's anything different, they're lying. That's the truth. You know, we all want each other's business and each other's members and clients. So that's true. However, we're not them because we're, although we all have the same national accreditation, which was a pain in the butt to get, by the way, and very expensive, very labor intensive. But it's important. It's a good thing. It's a good thing for the industry. But we're kind of a boutique, eclectic fitness conglomerate, creating not only education and certifications, but turnkey solutions for personal trainers and people who want to implement entrepreneurial quest and personal development with their fitness business. So we're weird and we're different and we embrace it.
Okay. And what John, for people watching, what John's talking about is he's talking about Nesta, his certification company.
Right. Yeah. Nesta, National Exercise and Sports Trainers Association.
Okay. Now, I'm curious because I want to dive into a little bit of that. You know, people want to start their businesses. In fitness, I would say they start a small personal training company. You've done things like that. Where did the idea come up for a certification company? And, you know, what was it like to try and go through and get that whole thing set up and built?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm actually going to teach people how to do that very soon.
Cool.
Yeah, so there's your not so subtle hint as what's to come.
Okay.
However, what I can tell you is that it can be a very simple process and it can be a very arduous process. How it all started was in 1992, and you know, I came from the endurance sports industry, mountain biking, triathlon, cycling, and so NESTA originally was the National Endurance Sports Trainers Association, same acronym but meant something different. And the first program we had was the Endurance Sports Trainer, and which we no longer offer. And I wanted to create a certification for people who wanted to coach people in endurance sports, because there was nothing at the time. This is a long, long time ago. And so I did it. I wasn't quite sure how it all worked. You know, this was all new. I was kind of an early comer to the internet, but I really didn't know what I was doing. And it wasn't working. It really wasn't working. And I was frustrated. And I saw my friends. I used to actually do all my mail through a mail center because I didn't even have an office at that time when I first started everything. I started everything from a 380 square foot bachelor apartment, and I slept on the floor with $2,000. That's it, man. And I almost moved back in with my parents. Pretty horrible, but it's true. And so I saw my buddy, who's an entrepreneur, and he actually, his company hosted my first website. Okay. And their offices were down in Laguna Beach here in California. And I saw him, and I told him, I said, I'm frustrated, and I think I'm going to quit this NESTA thing. I don't know if it's going to work. He said, you know what? I think you really have something here, and it's going to be big. He says, don't give up on it. Let's sit down and kind of figure out what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. And that was it. And that's how it all started. But when I first said I was going to do this, before this, when I first came up with the idea for it, I went into the bike shop. My buddy and I started my personal training business, and he started his bike shop the same month back in 1992. Mm-hmm. By the way, he's still in business and has a multi-million-dollar bicycle empire as well. He's a smart guy. And I told him what I was going to do, and he goes, who do you think you are that you're going to make your own certification? I said, well, why not? You know? So now the fitness industry has evolved a lot, and you know, you can make a certification. You can do a certification for other things. You can create an association. But getting accreditation and going through that and the approvals and the recognitions and the licensure and stuff, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, and it's a pretty good six-figure proposition to get all that stuff. But just, you know, creating a certification or becoming a CEU provider and an educational resource for the industry, it's not that hard. You have to know your stuff. You have to be able to market it. But there's nothing keeping you from doing it.
How long of a process was it for you from when you came up with the idea until you finally had everything finalized?
It's still not finalized. It's been 20 years. I would say, you know, before I came up with the concept, or from the time I said, I'm going to do this until something was actually viable, probably mm-hmm. 4 months. But, you know, it's always evolving. Every week we make an update, a modification, a change, an improvement. Every single week we do that for our programs because we get feedback from the members. And we go, well, we weren't doing that right, or we screwed up that, or we have to look at what are called the, as far as the testing goes, the psychometrics of the test. Mm-hmm. And psychometrics are basically the scientific applications of creating a non-biased high-stakes test. And to figure out what domains you're going to test under and which, what is the proper pass rate and how does it correlate with industry standards or norms and how do you do a peer review study? And then you do the scientific analysis of all this stuff. That takes time and you learn from it because you have to go through and things change over time and the scores get skewed over time, you know, more. Less people pass, and you have to have it at a certain rate to have the appropriate psychometrics of an exam. So that, all that stuff has to be modified all the time. Or there's a typographical error, or an image is out of place, or there's some ambiguity in a question, and there's actually two possible correct answers. So you have to go back and modify it so there's clarity. You don't want it to be confusing. Mm-hmm. You don't want it to be easy to pass for a savvy test taker. That's what it's called. Someone who's good at taking an exam. Like they can eliminate just right. what the distractors. That's called a savvy test taker. So you have to make it non-biased, fair, and appropriately challenging. Okay. And it's all those things. It's always evolving. So the answer is, it's never going to be done. It's never going to be finished.
At least, well, early on, you know, you had it going and you were trying to bring in people, get them certified. Mm-hmm. What was, you know, what were you doing to try and bring in those early people when it was new and not so many people really knew about it?
Google. Actually, this is before Google. Yeah. It was Yahoo, Dogpile,
wow.
AOL, and Ask Jeeves. That's when it was Jeeves.
Yeah.
Some people watching this are so young, I don't know if they even remember that. But
yeah.
But that was a long, long time ago.
Wow.
It was before anything, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like I used to have a 14.4K dial-up modem when I started. You know, and it made that.
We definitely wouldn't be able to do this on there with that. So.
Yeah, no, we would not be doing what we're doing today. So it was a long, long time ago. So basically, but the thing is, and this is even preceding the advent of pay-per-click.
Mm-hmm.
But when pay-per-click started, I got it on a company called Overture, which is now bought by Yahoo and it manages the Yahoo search network. I used to get clicks for a penny or two a piece.
Right.
A penny or two. Can you guys imagine that?
That'd be nice.
I'd be crushing it like that with a penny or two a piece. And now you're lucky if you get it for 50 cents, mm-hmm. sometimes $2, depending on what you're doing.
Wow. How many people currently do you have within the organization?
You mean as far as members and students and all that?
Yeah.
I don't know exactly.
Okay.
I have other people who know that. I'm guessing. Well, you know, with all of our network for all the different things we do, you know, it's probably 80,000. And personal trainer graduates, you know, 10,000.
Okay.
And, you know, our reach is in over 50 countries on every continent, definitely every state in the U.S.
Right.
And we do a lot of work in Canada and growing a lot in the Middle East, too, as it's become more opened up. It's interesting.
That is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
You're listening to an exclusive interview on Fitness Business Interviews. To hear more interviews like this, visit www.fitnessbusinessinterviews.com. All right. So this is a big, big business for you. It does a lot, you know. You're not just creating little small, you know, mom and pop type of businesses. When you go in and you say, okay, I want to start a new project or a new business, do you go into it now with that mindset that it's got to have a system in place, or do you kind of start and then say, you know, I'll work my way into the systems?
When I was younger and more foolish, I did not create a system.
Okay.
And now everything has to have a system. And that's probably one of the most important things that I've learned, and definitely a mistake I made in the past, is not creating a systemization for things. So a systemization as far as the customer experience, from the moment they learn about you until they go away or pass away. Seriously, I know that sounds bad, but it's the truth. From that whole span, they have to have a great experience. So what experience are you providing for them, not just what service are you selling them?
Mm-hmm.
So it's that whole thing. So that has to be systematized. And the guesswork of how that works and the chronology of everything has to be smoothed out as well. As far as systematizing from a monetary perspective, creating continuity income is by far one of the most important things you can do. And just to clarify for everyone, continuity income is reoccurring, predictable monthly income that's hopefully growing over time. And that's, you know, monthly memberships or coaching programs or memberships or licensing fees or whatever. So, you know, I have, I don't know, 8 or 9 continuity income models in place,
mm-hmm.
fed from all the other things that we do as well. So that, because it's easier to keep someone as a customer rather than reselling and acquiring new customers. But that's also why you have to over-deliver mm-hmm. on everything that you promise and thrill them and exceed their expectations and give them great value.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you go into the business, like a new project or a business in mind, obviously the systems, but also as much as possible creating more of a passive type of income based off the continuity model?
Yeah. For me, it's all about lifestyle at this point. And I know, again, I'm getting all comfortable here, putting my foot up on the chair.
It's all good. Relax.
For me, at this point in my life, and as long as I've been doing this, and believe me, I wish I would have done this a long time ago, but that's one of the lessons we can get to, my screw-ups that I want everyone to avoid.
Sure.
But for me, it's about lifestyle and freedom and passive income while I'm able to help and serve more people with cooler stuff. So if I can make a bigger positive impact in people's lives and create more opportunity for them to be successful personally, professionally, and financially, mm-hmm. And in doing so, I'm able to create a lifestyle for myself, which lets me spend more time with my family. I can sleep in. I can stay up late if I want to, or I can get up and do an early workout, or I can go on vacation, or whatever I want to do. You know, I got up early for 20 years teaching fitness. And after 20 years, I had enough of getting up that early. So now I choose not to. But for 20 years, it served me very, very well. So like as an example, you know, I taught my own adventure boot camp for 10 years. And it was incredibly successful. And I'm so grateful for that. I mean, my personal camp, I made $20,000 a month working 1 hour a day. Most people would think I'm full of crap saying that, but it's really true. It's really true. I did that. So, you know, but after 10 years, I decided to move on and do some different things. So for me, now when I'm creating systems or businesses or whatever, I'm thinking, how can I live my ideal lifestyle? What do I want to do at my age? You know, and as we're recording this right now, I'm 42. And so I'm probably a little older than most people who are in the trenches actually training, whether it's CrossFit or Adventure Boot Camp or Impact or kettlebells or whatever they're doing. So, you know, I've done that. And now for me, it's time to go to the next phase of my life and create more value for the trainers who are doing what I had done. And, my joy comes from seeing them become successful. It's really, really cool to see these trainers take something that, like, when the whole process, like the culmination of it for me, aside from creating my lifestyle that I want, is like when I come up with an idea, like the latest thing I created was Tactics. It's a martial arts boot camp, Group X type program. And I worked super hard putting it together. It was a tremendous amount of work, physically demanding on me, tough on my team to put together, but I thought, I want to do this. This is so neat. And after many, many months of putting it together and launching it, and then to see people implement it in their cities and get featured on NBC News, and then to increase their income several thousand dollars a month and transform the lives of people in their community, like the message carries on, you know? And that's cool. Now, to me, that's what it's all about. Or if someone stops me on the street and says, you know, your program changed my life because now I can, you know, touch my toes. I got off blood pressure medication. I feel better about myself. And now my spouse and I have a better intimate relationship, whatever it is. You know, everyone deems success in it or constitutes it in a different way. So whatever it is for them, but being a part of that and being able to be a catalyst in that change in their life, that's cool. That's really, really fulfilling.
Very cool. Now, you're obviously at that point right now, but it wasn't like that when you first started, right? So can you take it, just, I guess, give us a little background of what it was like for you when it first started, maybe some of the struggles you had to go through?
Well, when I first started, my educational background has got, like, all pieced together. I didn't do, like, the traditional 2 years at a community college, and then, you know, it's technical institutes, online schools, community colleges, and special ed programs and special like radiology, like weird stuff all pieced together. So I was kind of piecing that together as I was building my business. So I didn't just go do something and say, okay, I'm going to start my career path this way. So I was actually working at a sports chiropractic clinic when I first started. This is before Nesta, before any of that. But I was racing bicycles and I love working out and, but I wanted to be a fitness pro. And so I had gone through medical training. I had done like 2 or 3 years of college and I learned radiology x-ray. And I was going to massage therapy school while I was training to become a personal trainer. And I remember I was working at this medical clinic Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And the doctor I worked with had done the Ironman, and he's the one who actually coached me to do the Ironman as well. So we train at lunch. We go out for 2 hours at lunch. He built a shower in the back. So after we train, you know, we could clean up afterwards and then work with the patients the rest of the day. And so I got to a certain point. So I moved away from home in my early 20s. I moved out and totally broke, clueless, but really motivated. And so I was starting my personal training business. I trade clients on Tuesdays and Thursdays because I was working at the sports medicine clinic Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then finally, which I realize now I misjudged the transition from going from that part-time job to owning my own personal training business. Because I made the transition in June, which was foolish because that's when most people plan their summer vacation. And as you know, as a fitness pro, that's when things slow down a little bit if you don't have that continuity income. Mm-hmm. So that was a problem. And so I really struggled, really, really struggled when I first started. So that was kind of foolish, but I didn't know any better.
Well, you got to start somewhere, right? You learned, yeah. And obviously, you know, you've built it up from there. So, you mentioned triathlons. Okay, this is kind of a random question. I personally haven't done any, but I was involved very closely in a lot of that in the organization and getting it planned. I happen to notice that people who do triathlons tend to be very successful with their careers and what they do. You know why? Maybe there's a correlation between that sport, maybe, and then their life. Okay, I'm kind of curious.
If you look at this is an interesting study, and this is part of the reason why we developed ITCA, the International Triathlon Coaching Association. Mm-hmm. There was a void. There is a certification, but we feel ours is far more comprehensive and has the business model. So that's why I wanted to bring that to the industry. But the other reason is because the demographic of a triathlete is phenomenal. So if you're a fitness pro, and I'm guessing you are if you're watching this video, if you want to reach an audience who has a lot of discretionary income and is highly motivated, work with a triathlete. And I'm paraphrasing this because I don't remember exactly. But if you get like Triathlete magazine and ask for their media kit, and if you compare the demographics of a triathlete and the reader of Triathlete magazine with the average demographic, the people, most of them have graduate degrees. Like 67% have graduate degrees. In America, the median and household income is like $48,000 or $50,000 a year. For a triathlete, it's like $125,000 a year. Mm-hmm. They're incredibly type A, high achiever, incredibly successful people.
Type AAA, yeah.
Yeah, because you have to be that motivated, structured, disciplined, and slightly kooky to do something like that.
Yeah.
So yes, it absolutely, there's a correlation. Without a doubt, there's a correlation between being good in a sport like triathlon, being able to afford a sport like triathlon too. It's not a cheap sport.
No,
and also your success in life and generally who those people are. And there's some great people. Triathletes are generally very, very cool people.
Yeah, it was one of the things that I noticed that stood out to me was just they were awesome people, but they were also just super highly motivated, and they were their careers, they were just, you know, top of the line in school, and they were just kicking butt with their businesses and their life. So it was very interesting for me. And you had mentioned your certification for triathlon. You've got a couple other ones, you know, obviously the big one, Nesta. What are a couple of the other ones you have? An MMA, what else?
Yeah, I'll just do the quick Reader's Digest version of each. The main one that people probably know most is NESTA, which is the National Exercise and Sports Trainers Association. We're NCCA accredited for our personal fitness trainer program, but we also have yoga and Pilates and sports conditioning and sports nutrition and lifestyle weight management, a lot of really cool CEU and specialization programs as well. Mm-hmm. Then we have ITCA, which we just talked about, International Triathlon Coaching Association. It's approved by every major organization, including the USA Triathlon, which is the governing body for the sport of triathlon and works with the Olympic Committee. So it's approved by them. And then we have the MMACA, which is the Mixed Martial Arts Conditioning Association. That's a division of NESTA also. We are the only certification of its kind in the world. We're approved by, obviously, NESTA because it's a division of NESTA, but also ISSA, NSCA, NASM. Our graduates, our coaches that are certified, are the coaches for the UFC world champion and several UFC champions and up-and-comers. And the MMACA is something I'm super proud of because we actually wanted to do it like 4 years ago, and we just weren't ready. The technology we needed wasn't there. We didn't have the things in place. And then about a year and a half ago, we decided to, you know, launch it again. But the information is phenomenal. We get great feedback from our members. They're from all over the world. And basically, you know, mixed martial arts is the fastest growing and one of the most popular sports in the world. The athletes are without a doubt some of the most skilled athletes because they have to have strength, balance, endurance, flexibility, explosive speed, proprioceptive abilities, mental control. I mean, it's like they're like superhumans. The conditioning is beyond anything you could fathom if you haven't done it because it's just crazy. We also have a sports psychology component and sports nutrition, all pertinent to developing top-level mixed martial arts athletes. However, what we've done with the program, too, is because a lot of people don't want to get punched in the face or choked out. I mean, that's the truth. And having that done to me at least 3 or 4 times a week, I can tell you it's not always that much fun getting punched in the face. So a lot of people just want the conditioning of the athletes and not necessarily become that type of athlete. So right. You can learn these conditioning things and apply it to your business and do MMA conditioning for people who want to do this. So it goes great with boot camp or CrossFit if you're already doing kettlebells or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just another plug-in, complete turnkey business model. And it's crazy popular.
Yeah. Now, The interesting thing is obviously you always seem one step ahead of the game. When you had these certifications, like you said, the MMA, you just weren't ready for it. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you realize that that was going to be the up and coming thing? How did you find the gaps for these things?
I asked questions to myself. Mm-hmm. I don't sit there and say now self, but I think to myself, and I say, right. You know, like, is this need fulfilled? How are these people being served? But also, I listen to people who know more than me in whatever I want to do. It goes back to what I said earlier.
Right.
And I also look at search statistics on Google. I do a lot of analytics with the keyword tool on Google, finding out what are the local searches, what are the related phrases, what's the trend over time, what do research groups show, where is sponsorship dollars being spent. What is the latest technology being used in conjunction with these things? Or what's also important is what technology is being used outside of what we know in the fitness world that can be brought over and implemented and customized in a way which hasn't been done yet.
Okay. So you're looking for all that. I mean, that kind of leads me into the next thing. You were Adventure Boot Camps.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you released that in 2000, I believe, right?
Correct. Yep.
That was, you know, what, 5 or 6 years before anybody even really started mentioning them and it really starting to become mainstream. Same idea. Like, where was it that you had the idea for that? And, you know, like, how did you know that that was going to be the way to go?
Well, I had seen things like that on TV, but it was more of the military kind of stuff.
Right.
And I had spoken to people who a lot of people think I invented fitness boot camps, which isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. I popularized it. Right. I helped create the global trend of it, but I did not create it. I saw what other people had done. Some people were willing to share some ideas with me. And some of the ideas I loved and some of them I didn't care for at all. And so I made it my own thing. I didn't like the military because I thought if someone needs to be browbeaten and berated and degraded and yelled at like a drill sergeant, to me, they need to go see Dr. Phil before they, you know, they come to boot camp. That's a whole other thing there. So
yeah.
Me, my life and what I do is always about an adventure. I always want an adventure. So that's what we called it, Adventure Boot Camp. The name was available. I like the bright colors. I want people to have fun. You know, it's intense and it's a hard workout, but it's a lot of fun. It's a great sense of community as well. And that's important to remember. And so, you know, that's how it came about, but it evolved. And, now it's, you know, obviously very, very successful. Our coaches do very well. And, you know, some of them make, you know, and believe me when I say this, not everyone makes this much money. So when sometimes people make crazy claims in the fitness industry, not boot camp, not in any particular area of fitness, but sometimes they make crazy claims. Some, however, this in fact is so. Some of our adventure boot camp licensed coaches make $250,000 a year teaching boot camp. Yeah. It's incredible. Not all of them, and the vast majority probably make around $100,000 or so. Mm-hmm. But they're only training an hour a day, so they're doing pretty darn good.
Yeah, it's not bad for one hour's worth of work in a day. Where was it that you decided, once you did it, to turn it into a licensing program and provide all the systems for it?
It was about 4 years after it was developed.
Okay.
That I decided to turn it into a turnkey solution. Mm-hmm. And it's evolved over time. You know, things that before the economy changed, before there was all the other systems out there, we had the run of the town, you know, and we never offered specials or discounts or bring a buddy for free. You didn't do any of that because we were just killing it.
Right.
And the economy was strong. The economy is a little tougher now. There's independent boot camps and there's licensed and franchise boot camps out there. So you have to change your strategy and your approach because of that. So Adventure Boot Camp has evolved over time, and it stood the test of time. It's got a good name, and we have a great group of trainers, and they're my friends, and we're family.
Where do you see the industry heading next couple of years? Put you on the spot a little bit.
I ask myself this all the time, and let me just tell you how wrong I was once before.
Okay.
I thought Zumba was a joke.
Okay.
When I first saw Zumba at an idea conference, I think it was in Vegas that year, I thought, here's another silly dance exercise, corny thing. Because I can't dance, man. I'm fairly lame at dancing. So it's not my thing. My wife goes, I think it's cool. But when I saw it, I'm like, I just don't know. And I was completely wrong. Mm-hmm. 100% wrong. I still am not a fan of Zumba. I'm not going to do Zumba. Mm-hmm. But it's cool. It's super popular. And they've made a ton of money. They've done very, very well, and they fill up their classes. I remember when Kelly and I went on our honeymoon, we traveled the California coast, and we were like gone like 2 weeks, and we went to all the touristy spots, being geeks up and down the coast. Mm-hmm. Every place we went to, of course, we have to find a gym to work out at, and every place we went to had a Zumba class, and they were filled with people. So I was totally wrong. So I have to say that, you know, I get it right frequently, but I've also really screwed up and have missed the mark. So where do I think it's going? I think more specialization and niche fitness services are going to be popular. Just like niche marketing, some of it has to do with the social media and the ability to get your message out in a broad way, but to only specific people who want your particular type of fitness, workout, personal development type of program. So some of it actually is because of the social media elements that allows us to, you know, hit those niches and those groups and those fan pages and, you know, bring those people together. Otherwise it's hard to get that many people involved in a niche. Mm-hmm. But social media element has actually allowed that to be easier.
Yeah.
So more niche programs. People like Total Solutions. They like that a lot.
Done for you. Yep.
Done for you or done with you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I see more integration with the medical industry. However, there's so many aspects with the medical industry because they talked about insurance reimbursement and license and all that stuff. But the truth is, physical therapists often don't get the proper compensation. And then after them are the athletic trainers, and they're still part of the allied health field, and they're going to get financial reimbursement from insurance far before we ever do. Yep. So all that has to happen first. So if you're holding out for that, you're kidding yourself. And so you can align yourself with medical professionals. I think you should learn some pre and post rehab and rehabilitative and corrective exercise kind of stuff. trend we see a lot of, and we're updating our program and relaunching it next week because of that, is corporate wellness.
Yeah, that's it.
This is huge because absenteeism and employee lack of productivity because of physical inabilities and stress and things like that costs our economy many billions of dollars every year, and companies have to take a preventative measure. In the past, companies didn't want to stick with a specific corporate fitness or wellness program long enough to see its benefits. But I think now there's enough evidence and research to substantiate its benefit and its cost cost benefits. And I believe, and I don't remember exactly, but basically, it's for every dollar invested in a corporate wellness program, the company yields about a $3 benefit.
Wow. Okay.
So it takes time, but the biggest thing is getting what's called employee buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get them to be willing to participate in these different wellness incentive type programs? Right. And so that's what we teach. And, you know, we're not teaching you how to do a squat, a lunge, or a push-up. You already know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do a health risk assessment? How do you get employee buy-in? How do you do a corporate health fair? How do you do a corporate lunch and learn? How do you work with the human resources department?
It's a big thing.
Set company to consult many different corporations. And what is the best sized corporation to deal with? Which one is most likely to have a successful program? And in addition to that, which one is most likely to pay for your services?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different moving parts. So that's another trend I see.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that. I actually had a connection with GE.
Oh, yeah.
So a big one out when I was out in Connecticut, and they, like, there's a company, they're all about it. They're on top of things. And like you said, they were doing things, I guess, the right way. They had learned and they had brought someone in, but it's a huge growing field. And I agree with you. I think that's one way things are definitely trending. And, that being said, a lot of the stuff that you do is, you know, the certifications, a lot of it is offline, but some of it is online. Are you shifting more of your business online now? Is it easier? And is that where you're going?
Yes. Well, as we speak right now,
mm-hmm.
we are moving everything online.
Okay.
With one exception. Actually, two exceptions. We had physical products which were shipped, CDs, DVDs, manuals, work booklets, things like that. But we want to be more green, more environmentally conscious. We want to save money, save resources, and make things more efficient. And we want to unify all the processes. We talk about processes.
Right.
You know, unification of the processes throughout the different things that we do, so they're easily scalable and replicable as well. So all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
The two exceptions are about five times a year we do live trainings to become a certified life strategies coach, the Spencer Institute. And we also are contracted with a company that provides our two-day intensive workshops in preparation for our certification to become a personal trainer.
Okay.
But that's outsourced. But that's it. Everything else is done online. And with our new learning models, asynchronistic learning, and what's called also called nonlinear learning.
Mm-hmm.
So in linear learning, for example, You give all your information out, you know, and here's step 1 through 6, finish these steps, take your test. In a non-linear learning environment, you create scenarios, and scenarios are presented to you and case studies. And then based on different things you choose, you have different possible outcomes. And then you have to resolve the different possible outcomes based on a non-linear pattern of learning.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you more involved in the outcome and more responsible for the outcome rather than just regurgitation of things that you have retained for a period of time.
Right. Right. Now, when it comes to doing things online and you're shifting that way, for you, what is it that, you know, what is it that you have to do to be successful online in running a business online?
Well, right now it's making everything mobile available. And, I'm hoping that iPad, iTunes,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Steve Jobs sees the light and makes things Flash compatible, because other tablet devices do.
Yeah, yeah.
And it really is a hindrance.
Mm-hmm.
Some things we do have to be done with Flash in Adobe because it's part of the online non-linear learning.
Right.
But also on the same server, we have a lot of the Flash videos. So some of the things that we do at this point can't be used on an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, that's it. That's the only thing we're working through and changing things to basically using Amazon S3 server and using M4V. Is that MV4? I got mixed up. Anyway.
Yeah, the file.
Format. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. to where it can be seen on any device.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. But everything else is very universal. We want things to be very user-friendly and simple. So our customer support is also more unified. Okay. So we're not trying to do all these different things. So the type of support that we have to provide and the infrastructure we have and the technical skills of our staff have to change as we mm-hmm. But you know, we just want to have people have a great experience and be able to enhance their lives and make it fun.
Okay.
You know, if it's an arduous, painful journey, no one wants to go on it.
Okay, so that's probably one of your main keys to being successful online is to make it fun, enjoyable, and easy for your clients.
Well, easy to do, but make the curriculum appropriately difficult.
Right.
But as far as the experience and the process and the functionality, very easy and intuitive. And what we've done is streamlined a lot of things. And I think, you know, before we got started here, I was telling you I switched to Mac myself.
Yeah.
I like the whole, aside from the not having Flash on an iPad, I like the whole Mac idea because it's clean, it's simple, it's minimalistic. There's a lot of empty white space, and you only have what you need, and it's intuitive. And I think that's really important because we get bombarded with tens of thousands of messages and images and campaigns and things every day. And if you can eliminate some of that noise and almost give people a reprieve from all that while the environment, it makes their experience with you better because they don't feel like they're being bombarded again. They feel like they're appropriately engaged.
Okay, so we're looking to wrap up. I got a couple other, I guess, quick fire questions that do require a little bit of thought, but I want to know for you, who was your biggest mentor and inspiration?
Starting out, it was my dad because he was a bodybuilder. And if he hadn't gotten me into all this, then we wouldn't be talking right now.
Right.
So definitely my dad. And actually, when I started out, I was trained by a former Mr. Universe when I was 12 years old, Mr. Tony Emmett. He won Mr. Universe, Mr. World, Mr. United Kingdom, Mr. Great Britain. And, you know, Tony's probably nearly 70 now.
Mm-hmm.
But he helped me when I was a young kid just starting out and really taught me a lot of old school bodybuilding stuff, but really taught me a good work ethic and made me shape up and pay attention.
Okay. We talked a few of the things before you actually mentioned. What are some of your biggest failures and what did you learn from them?
Thinking that I was important for one. placing too much emphasis on myself and not other people when I was younger and hopefully far more foolish. Mm-hmm. And I've learned a lot of that. And what happens in the fitness industry is it tends to be very egocentric and a lot of testosterone and self-importance and hey, look at me and all that. And I definitely got caught up in it and it's foolish. So if the people watching this find themselves doing that, I encourage them to stop.
Okay.
And people have said to them, hey, you're being a jackass or whatever, then listen, because they probably are.
Right.
And so, you know, you have to take yourself seriously. You want to take pride in yourself. You have to love yourself, but in a good, healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
But the emphasis is not on you. It's what you can do for other people and just be the best person you can be. Okay. So that's definitely something that I've learned over time. And poke fun at myself a lot more because I know I'm a goofy, eccentric person. So that's cool. I mean, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other mistake I made, actually was along those same lines or as a byproduct of that. And that is trying to create a big business rather than a big bank account. That is such an important message. You guys pause this video for a second and write that down, man. That's so important. You don't want a big business. You want a big bank account. A big business can be a big pain in your butt. So what do I mean? Like, I tried to just make things bigger than it needed to be, because I thought that meant success. And it has nothing to do with success at all. All it did was create more stress and more headache and definitely a lot more overhead. you know, I had like 13 employees and I like technology has allowed me to eliminate a lot of that stuff too. But also another message is be slow to hire and quick to fire.
Right.
Slow to hire and quick to fire. Very, very important. But you know, I thought I needed to have a big building and all this different stuff. And now I still own these buildings because that's part of my retirement plan.
Right.
But I have a guy who does alternative fuel and green energy rent this big building from me. He's paying my mortgage and now I have a great retirement when the mortgage on the building's paid off in a few years. So, but I didn't need that building, but I thought I did. Because I thought it was part of the big picture. You know, I thought it was necessary. And now I run all these things that we talk about and more that we haven't talked about.
Yeah.
most of it I do from this room. This is what you see behind me. This is actually a room. My girls have their music over here, Guitar Hero and GarageBand and their keyboard and stuff right over here. And I come in here for a few hours a day and do my stuff. And we have a little tiny executive suite down the street here where I have three or four people in there and that's it. And that's really the way, that's the business of the future. But you know, having all that stuff, that big stuff and everything, that doesn't mean anything. And it just wastes your time, your money and your effort and it bloats you. You know, it's just not necessary. And it went along with thinking that I was bigger or needed to be bigger or had to do more. And it's not necessary. And that's it. Huge lesson. I mean, I can't emphasize that enough. That probably screwed me up. And I believe me, I'm grateful. I know I've been fortunate. I know I've done some cool stuff and I'm so honored to be able to help people and be where I'm at in the industry. And I think I would be much further ahead if I hadn't done these really foolish, dumb things. And it was so painful to go through that process and kind of have that epiphany, that, you know, I would be much further ahead, but I'm still grateful that I learned it because now I can help other people avoid the same foolishness.
Absolutely. And what is it now? Usually it's not just one thing and it may be tough to answer, but what is it that's made you successful?
I'm very driven. I'm very driven. I always want to know what's next, what's better. How can the, like, no matter what I see, if it's a person, a place, a thing, a building, my home, anything I see, it might already be awesome. I have to make sure I'm clear on this because I don't want to send the wrong message. I appreciate it. I honor it. I respect it. And I want to know how to make it better.
Cool.
Always. It's cool. It's awesome. Now, what can be refined? How can we shave that edge? How can we make it taller? How can we get more energy from it? What will make that feel better? Whatever it is, how can you make it better? Why is it already awesome? And what's missing to take it to the next level? Is it Jim Collins, Good to Great? Am I saying that correctly?
Yep.
Yeah. Great book also. It's good, but what makes it great? I go on these tangents, but this is important too. You have to surround yourself with people who demand as much of themselves as you do of yourself. And sometimes that's hard.
Right.
Because if you're kooky obsessive like I am, you get a bunch of people like you in a room, you're going to drive each other crazy. but generally, you want to surround yourself with people who really ask and demand a lot of themselves and others. They hold high standards for themselves because you end up being a product of your environment. And I think parents say that to their kids. They want their kids to hang around good other kids, you know, and the other kids have parents that have addiction problems or they don't behave right in front of the kids or their other kids are doing drugs or, you know, whatever. The parents always say, you got to be careful who you hang out with. But what's interesting is as we get older, as we're adults, it's almost like people forget that part of the equation. It's like it doesn't stop mattering. It's just that you stop thinking about it.
Yep, absolutely.
It's perhaps even more important.
Absolutely. That's such a good point. It's funny you said that. I was talking to somebody about that exact same thing yesterday. So it's a great point. At what point in your career business did you realize that you'd finally made it?
I don't know if I have.
Okay. That's what I figured. That's the answer I was expecting, because a lot of people say that, but I figured I'd ask it anyway.
Yeah. You know what's funny? Because I am on this quest, and this is an important message too, I do about 20 hours of education and research every week, mm-hmm. whether it's technology, internet stuff, science, personal development, brain training, linguistics, relationship stuff, whatever it is, about 20 hours a week. So, you know, after 4 weeks have passed, like every month I'm thinking, God, last month I really didn't do that very well, mm-hmm. you know? And then you look back, even, you know, maybe you do this too, like a year ago, you think, at the time I thought it was really cool. Now I look back and I'm like, gosh, I did this and this and this and this wrong. And the hard part for me, and maybe for other people too, is not to get down on yourself because you didn't do things as well as you know you can do it now.
Right.
Because at the time you did the best you can with what you had.
Mm-hmm.
But what's important is you keep asking better questions from smarter people and demanding more of yourself. So every time you do something, you raise it to the next level rather than accepting something as it is. Doesn't mean you don't appreciate it. You just know it can be better.
Very cool. All right. Well, I know you have a bunch of other things going on and coming up. What do you want people to know about that you have coming up, and where can they find more information about you?
Well, my main website is my name, johnspencerellis.com. And from there, you can go and see all the different stuff that I'm doing. What I'd really like to invite people to do is come to our live event in Dallas, Texas, May 20th through 22nd, Fitness Fortunes Live. And it's fitnessfortuneslive.com. It's one of those things where if people say, it'll change your life, and you're like, yeah, sure, it really will. When you apply it, we're going to teach you how to do it all. And you have to apply it. And it's not one of those things that's a pitch fest where it's like, act now, only $24.95, step right up. It's not like that. We will have some cool stuff for people if they want it, but there is no pressure, no hard sells, no pitch fest. I'm not going to do that because I can't stand it. It drives me nuts. I want people to go there and say, oh my gosh, I have the clarity and the direction I needed because I'm a great fitness pro, but I'm tired of living paycheck to paycheck. I want more. I want more for my family. I know I can do more, but I just don't know how to do it. And that's frustrating. And it's, and this is a distinction too. There's a difference between being frustrated and being stuck.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
If you're stuck, it means you have no resources and no way of moving forward. If you're frustrated, it just means you're not there yet. And the resources are there. You just have to go get them and apply them. And the resources are there at Fitness Fortunes Live. And it absolutely, well, first of all, it's going to be a blast. You got to see the website. It's just packed full of information. We have world-class entertainment from the winner of The Last Comic Standing, my friend John Heffron.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to learn how to do everything you ever wanted to do to make more money, have more free time, and get more passive income. And you're going to learn from people who are already making $100,000 or even up to $1 million a year as a fitness pro. So it's not like we're just making this stuff up. You're going to learn people are already doing it. And they're going to get them up on stage and drill them with questions and say, how'd you do it? And they're going to spill their guts.
Very cool. Yeah, and you have a good list of, like you said, entertainment, and people are coming to speak and presenters. So it's pretty high quality stuff.
Oh, it's awesome. And it's very affordable. And mm-hmm. We have a VIP option. And top it all off, it's going to be a party.
Awesome. That's who doesn't want to go, you know, miss one of those. Those are always good times, right?
Totally.
So, well, John, I appreciate all the time that you've spent here and shared some great wisdom tips and business building advice. I really appreciate it, and I wish you the best of luck in the future with everything.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You've just listened to an exclusive interview on fitnessbusinessinterviews.com. If you're looking to take your business to the next level, or you're looking for more interviews and secret insider tips, then visit www.fitnessbusinessinterviews.com.